friends, before we begin this episode, I want to extend you a personal invitation to join me here on the campus of Midwestern Seminary and Spurgeon College for our upcoming Spring Preview Day. On April the 11th, you'll be able to meet our faculty, enjoy some incredible Kansas City barbecue, tour the Spurgeon Library, take in all that is Midwestern Seminary and Spurgeon College, and also be entered to win incredible gifts like a new MacBook Air, which we trust will position you well as you prepare to be a student. For more information, please go to mbts.edu. That is mbts.edu. Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Jared Bumpers back into the studio, who's joining me today as co-host once again as we continue to discuss one of my books, Letters to My Students, Volume 2 on Pastoring. Dr. Bumper serves here at Midwestern Seminary as assistant professor of preaching, as well as evangelism, and is directing the FTC cohorts here on campus. Jared, welcome back to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you. Looking forward to the conversation.
It was fun to catch up a little bit before we begin recording this, and glad to hear things are going well for your family and local church ministries and all the rest. And as we are recording this, next week, you and I will be preaching a little conference, a workshop for preachers in the St. Louis area. So by the time you listen to this, dear friends, that event will have already happened. But I mentioned that at this juncture just to know, just for you to know, that we host these events throughout the country a number of times a year. So our basic rhythm is for the Preaching and Preachers Workshop is two off-campus and one on-campus each semester. So this semester, for instance, there's been one in Dallas and now one in St. Louis and one on our campus here in just a few weeks. In the fall, we'll be in the Tulsa area, as I recall, and in the Oklahoma City area, as well as on campus here in Kansas City. So hopefully you guys can join us for some of those events and that you'll find those strengthening and encouraging for you in your work. So today we're talking about the pastor and developing leaders, and again, thinking specifically about the local church setting. And Jared, hey, it's great to have you here. I'm going to toss you the ball and let you lead the conversation.
Yeah, we're going to talk about leaders. And I think you have big picture leadership at the pastoral level. You have leaders within the church. You have some who are on staff, some who are not on staff. And so I want to kind of touch on several of those different areas of leadership, starting with the question, who can lead or who is leading in the church? Is the pastor the only one who leads in a church, or are there others who step up and serve in various capacities as leaders?
It's a very good question. And look, I do think we see a plurality of leadership in the New Testament. Now, that expresses itself at the local church level in different ways. So let's think about the category of pastors or elders, and we do see a plurality of service in the local church setting there. Now, within that understanding, you have the tradition of primus inter pares, first among equals, that is often played out in the local church setting where the teaching pastor, the preaching pastor, the lead pastor, the senior pastor, whatever the nomenclature is used locally. Though there's a plurality dynamic, there's a recognition that he carries a unique leadership role as the primary preacher or teacher of the Word of God. More broadly in Southern Baptist life, beyond Southern Baptist life to evangelical life, you do have different leadership practices that show up. Sometimes that looks like a body of deacons, which is not so biblical, I would argue, as far as what, how oversight leadership is to be given. Sometimes you have more of a single pastor model, at least on paper, and structured that way in more of a corporate, and don't hear that critically, but perhaps more of a corporate org chart, organizational chart type setting. But even that, I would say, is not ideal and is not really biblical as much as we would like there to be a fuller plurality of leadership, even if that's more taking place more organically and less, let's say, conceptually at this point. So in other words, the pastor, even if on paper he is the only leader in the church, should always be looking to raise up, to equip, to encourage around him a plurality of godly leaders. So yes, in the local church setting, we're looking to raise up, to equip, to call out a not just a leader, but leaders.
Yeah, that's great. So pastoral leadership, you know, you're arguing for a plurality of pastors. The next level below that, just think about, okay, there are other opportunities in a local church for service, those who are serving with students, for children, finances. Help us think about identifying, I think on the one hand, how do you identify leaders, people who can serve in an exemplary way in the context of a local church? So identification and then cultivation. Okay, we think these people are gifted to serve or to lead. How do we cultivate, develop, grow them in their leadership abilities?
Yeah. So the term leader itself is an interesting term, and we tend to use it in a particular way in the 21st century. again, and again, I don't mean this to self-loathe here as 21st century Christians and ministers, but we tend to use in a way that more resembles the corporate or the entrepreneurial world than the local church world. That being said, it is a term we use. It's a term we're so conversant with, a term that it's really hard to even talk about organizational structures without using. So we're going to use it, but understand there are some caveats associated with it. The local church setting, even though I just argued that deacons are not called per se to lead, I want to acknowledge that faithful deacons who serve well wind up being de facto leaders in the local church, and that's okay. So the office itself is not a leadership office, but as you have men who are serving with integrity, with skill, with devotion, the church will naturally look to them as respectable men, and they will find themselves leading, and that's okay. So we should not seek to elbow them out per se, as God naturally uses them within the flock as a whole to give leadership. Additionally, I would say, beyond the role of pastor slash elder, the role or office of deacon, then you get into more body than local church. And like every other organization, the local church has people who are more or less gifted, more or less inclined, more or less willing to actually take up responsibilities and actually give oversight. Whether you're working in the nursery, you're handing out bulletins, whatever you're doing, every healthy church needs people who serve in those roles and who lead in those roles. Mm-hmm. And those two terms, service and leadership, sound dramatically different to 21st century ears, but they actually come together in a very sweet biblical way as we see those who are leading are those who are serving, and those who are serving are those who are giving leadership so very often.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things even in this conversation. What does it mean to lead? And you're basically pointing towards servant leadership where the person is shaping those who are around them by serving in an exemplary way and seeking to influence them for the glory of God and for the good of the church, to strengthen the church. So yeah, how do you kind of back to the second part of the question there? How do you cultivate that servant-hearted leadership in the context of the local church? So, giving them opportunities, training opportunities. What does that look like, or what should it look like?
Yeah, I'll tell you first of all what you don't do. You don't put hypothetical leaders into roles of leadership. And so again, just put a bullet in my head. Mm-hmm. In local church setting, when I hear someone say something like, well, if we give him or her this leadership role, maybe then they'll start coming faithfully.
Yes, unfortunately, I've heard the same thing. It never works out well.
If we make him a deacon, then maybe he'll start showing up. You know, let's all just end our misery now. That is not what you do.
Right.
I think you're basically undertaking an intentional approach that goes back to three words. You're looking to inspire, to identify, and to equip. What do I mean by inspire? You want to speak of the church in such a way, the local church, that serving it is a glorious task.
That's good.
You'll speak about roles, both formal biblical roles, pastor slash elder, deacon, in such a way that those are worthy of aspiration, mm-hmm. as Paul says in 1 Timothy 3. Moreover, you'll speak about the less glamorous roles, you know, serving the parking lot when it snowed, greeting visitors at the door, passing the offering plates, cleaning mm-hmm. the facilities, serving meals. Speak mm-hmm. of those in such a way that those indeed are attractive positions as well, not because the task itself isn't menial, but because the body of Christ isn't menial. Hmm. You see?
Yeah, that's good.
So speak of all those functions holistically in ways that indeed are attractive because God is attractive and the church is attractive, and glorifying God through our service, whether visible and to much applause, or not visible and no one recognizes in such a way that's attractive.
Yeah, can I just make sure. One just tiny point here? I think the way you're speaking about that is incredibly helpful, because sometimes as leaders, there's a temptation to shame people into serving or ministry of like, man, we have this great need and we have, man, there are 100 people here. Why can't somebody watch the nursery?
What's wrong with you people?
Yeah. And it's different to say, hey, if you watch the children, man, that frees up the parents to come in and to hear the word. You're doing something meaningful and you're elevating and you're motivating them by highlighting the importance of serving, not by shaming them. And so I think what you just said is very important.
Yeah. And there's a defensive component of this as well, Jared, because I've bumped up against this a few times in pastoral ministry over the years. Don't push on a door too hard to get someone to serve. Hmm. Again, you need to present the need and you speak about it in inspirational, attractive terms. But if a person is reluctant to serve, often there's a deeper issue. Sometimes just spiritually, they're not inclined to serve because they don't see the importance of the local church. But sometimes it's a very deeper issue. Their marriage is on the rocks. They're engaged in some personal secret sin, perhaps something even more devious than that. And so don't push too hard on someone to serve, because that actually may be the last person you need serving with your students.
Yeah.
That may be the last person you need overseeing a men's ministry and so forth. Mm. So I want to inspire. Second of all, You want to identify within that. So have an eye out for those who seem to have the natural abilities, the natural character, the natural interest in serving the Church of the Lord Jesus Christ. And I think this is key. And so, dear hearers, please listen carefully here. It's one thing to say from the pulpit, we really need some people to work in the men's ministry. Would any of you men volunteer? It's another saying, Jared, we need someone to lead this men's ministry. I see within you the potential to do it. I want you to pray about it, and we're going to visit for breakfast in about 2 weeks and have a thorough conversation about it. That's an entirely different approach.
Yeah,
we give whosoever may come calls to the gospel, we ought not give that to church leadership. And so the fact that you are looking to identify who these men or women are for respective roles, who you sense as a pastor, you sense as a leader within the church, have the character, the gifting, the apparent willingness, and then give them something to pray about, to wrestle with, first of all, you can be a lot more successful, most likely as far as actually stocking a team. Second of all, you're going to prevent yourself from having to have a bunch of awkward conversations, because oftentimes those who are most inclined to respond to the, hey, does anyone want to work with the students next year call, are those you least need to actually be serving with your students.
Right.
So you can find yourself having to reverse engineer that and tactfully explain to some people why actually you don't need them to serve, while actually not touching on the people who you really most need to serve. That very often happens. So there's a defensive aspect of that as well. So you're looking to identify. Gives you a selectivity. So inspire, identify, and then thirdly, you're looking to equip. Okay, who are these people? And so not just, hey, does anyone want to teach junior high boys, Sunday school? Jared, I think you can do this. I see the character. I see the interest. I see the gifting. I'm not asking you to sign up till Jesus comes, but this fall I'm going to be out of town for 2 Sundays. Would you be my substitute Sunday school teacher these 2 Sundays? Here's some resources. Here's our prayer lesson. Here's what we're doing. And then you see how it goes. And then you can perhaps talk about extending that. And hey, next fall, would you teach a 6-week class? Or this coming spring, would you actually teach the semester? Here's what you're committing for, 14 weeks, where we evaluate after. That way they have a natural exit ramp and you have a natural exit ramp for them if you need it. You follow? So speaking those terms, so inspirationally, inspire, identify, and then thirdly, to equip and work with them in that process. So what you hope to happen is over time, you become this artesian well, naturally producing, naturally bubbling up to the top leaders for the local church. And so that's what you're after.
Yeah, I think it's important. You're talking about taking action, and I think that's important to recognize that leadership or people coming to serve is not going to probably not going to happen accidentally. There's a level of intentionality on the pastor, the ministry leader's part. The things that you've mentioned, I think, are helpful. Even the personal identification. If you make a public appeal, hey, come serve, the assumption for many of the people listening is, well, oh, that person will do it, or this brother will do it, this sister will do it, and nobody's, if the assumption is everybody does it, nobody ends up doing it. So the personal appeal is great. And then equipping and the short-term opportunities, I think easing people into areas of service and leadership, I think is wise. So some really, really good advice there.
Yeah, look, you don't need to say to someone, I believe God's equipped you to do this, unless you really believe God has gifted them to do it. And you're probably not going to know if God has really gifted and equipped them to do it unless you've seen them do it. And so an incremental approach, letting people get their feet wet, again, that's not just protecting you in the church, it's also ensuring the integrity of the process that you can actually say with someone. You can say with integrity, I believe I see these things in you. I'd like for you to try it. I'll work with you, as opposed to just announcing, hey, God's calling you to do it. And then you get into it 3 months and realize this is a nightmare.
Yeah. So we've talked about kind of higher level deacons, pastors, plurality of elders, talked about deacons, talked about identifying, inspiring, identifying and equipping leaders. What about kind of this middle level of staff members? Maybe somebody, a pastor is listening and they serve as a lead pastor, teaching pastor. They're on a pastoral staff with multiple pastors, but they have staff who aren't serving in a pastoral role, but are serving the local church. They're looking to fill a role that's non-pastoral, kind of a staff role, that middle area, not a volunteer, but not a pastor. You in your book, you talk about how to hire ministry staff. And so love for you just to kind of flesh out some of the things that you touched on there to help pastors think about hiring well.
Yeah, thank you. And let's just underscore the importance of this. Most churches, most pastors don't have a lot of bullets to fire. They may have one, a full-time pastor, and a part-time associate or two, or perhaps a couple of full-time roles. So in other words, this is urgently important.
And not to overemphasize it, but if you get it wrong and you have a small team, that one person can absolutely make your life miserable.
I tell students it's a 3-year mistake.
Yeah.
It takes a year to figure out it was a mistake. Takes a year usually to figure out how to get out of the mistake. And then a year to get over the fact that you had a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, it tends to be about a three-year problem.
Yep.
So you have to be super careful of that. I think you also have to ask yourself philosophically, what is the role? In other words, is this a developmental role or not? And so there's certain times in ministry, the church is, you know, where it is in its life cycle and resourcing and all the rest, that, hey, okay, this can be a developmental role.
Yep.
We can hire a person who's 24 and we can develop in the next several years because we see gifting, we see character, we see promise, et cetera, et cetera. And given the overall composition of the ministry team here, this is a good step to take.
Yeah, they get to grow with the role in the church. Yeah.
So is it a developmental role or not? And probably it's going to be more not, especially if you only have a couple bullets to fire. But also if you have a couple bullets to fire and a limited budget, there's going to be a touch of development to it, okay? Mm. So you need a person who can step in and contribute. You don't need a five-year project. Person who can step in and contribute. But you need to give leadership, oversight, give them space to grow, work with them, et cetera. So understand conceptually, philosophically, what this role is, what can we afford, what are our resources, what do we need? Know going into what you're going to get. Second of all, I would say, or additionally, I would say, in general, I always give my first eye to the local church. Meaning, is there someone within this church that God is calling, who is a known quantity that we can work with?
Yes,
the additional benefit of that is, back to the known quantity piece is, hey, if this person is, you know, 32 years old, has a job, perhaps they can take that on part-time, see how it goes. If you see promise there, and then maybe 24 months later, they're actually leaving their full-time job and working at the church full-time. And you can nurse that along as opposed to moving someone, you know, from New Mexico to Missouri and all that goes with that and all the risk that goes with that. And this is your one bullet you got to fire and you don't know this person and you hope it works out and you get there and realize his wife hates him and then, oh my goodness, what do we do, you know?
Yeah.
And so there is a known quantity approach, not just for the individual, but the church. That goes a long way. And but again, most churches, limited in size, limited number, and therefore you often have to go outside of the church. And that's great. And that's where a ministry partner like a seminary, Midwestern, other sound seminaries out there, other ministry partners, other healthy churches can be really helpful. I, especially on these lines, would encourage you to identify larger churches, multiple staff, who are like-minded theologically, like-minded philosophy of ministry. Perhaps you have a personal rapport, friendship with those lead pastors. And then, hey, maybe you can't hire their student minister, but you can hire the guy who's been their student intern for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's developed his chops there. He's ready to step up into leadership, go from part-time, full-time, what have you. And so that can be a great place to find someone. Mm-hmm. So know where to look. Begin in the local church, then look to affiliate ministry partners, a seminary, larger church, some other ministry that you can look to. And then I would say you begin to move really specifically through the categories of concern or the categories of interview you need to work with. And I'm just going to tick through these here. You can look to my book, Letters to My Students, Volume 2 on Pastoring for more detail here. But I'll tick through this just a little bit here and tell you some major potholes to avoid. Number one, you need doctrinal alignment. The only person who's kind of sort of on the same page, you have the big theological buckets, of course, around the nature of Scripture, issues, for instance, of complementarity, which seem to be, you know, an issue these days that many churches are drifting on, many individuals are drifting on. Perhaps it's something, it's concerns around Reformed theology, eschatology, whatever are those defining theological issues for yourself and your church that you do need alignment on with any staff members, okay? And different churches, that's going to vary a little bit, depending on what the hotbed issues are. But you need doctrine alignment. Number two, you need personal piety. And here we're back to those character issues. And again, you look to 1 Timothy 3 and the qualifications, for instance, and I won't, you know, fully digress here, but we all know those are largely a list of character qualifications. You know, they are a list of character qualifications except for the one, the ability to teach. So doctrinal alignment, personal piety slash appropriate character. Number three, mission buy-in, okay? The question is not, do they like the idea of being in ministry? The question is, are they called to the ministry that is available in your church? Is this a stepping stone? Is this a person who their idea of ministry is listening to podcasts and commenting on social media and, you know, scrolling blogs? Or do they actually want to serve these people in this time and place and invest themselves in this congregation? So look for mission buy-in, that they are wanting to be a part of your team. They're wanting to serve these people. They're sitting up in their chair when you're having this conversation. You're not talking them into it. Man, they are emotionally leaning into this. So number one, doctrinal alignment. Number two, personal piety. Number three, mission bias. Number four, ministry ambition. Okay, now that's a tricky word, ambition. I realize that that can be misheard. And we don't need people who are hyper-ambitious, and as the old saying goes, to where their ambition takes them somewhere their character cannot keep them. We don't want that. But what are we supposed to do, hire someone who's unambitious for the gospel? No. We want channel drivenness. We want biblical ambition, focused energy. So person, man, they are zealous for your community. They are zealous to strengthen your church. They are zealous to preach the word. They are zealous to have an expanding portfolio of ministry responsibilities. There's a fire in their belly. There's energy in their body. Well, man, they are ready to make a difference. Yep. You want that. You do not want someone you're having to kind of talk up for ministry. You don't want a counseling project. You want a co-laborer. Okay?
That's a good word.
Number five, love of the flock. Again, not just like, I've always wanted to live in St. Louis, or I've always wanted to live in Phoenix, or I've always thought it'd be cool to pastor in Boston. But no, actually, do they seem to have a love for these people? And understand, in the early stages, that's going to be embryonic. They're not going to know these people right. But are you sensing from your conversations, exposure of them to the church and the church in them, that that love is blooming, blossoming? So they actually are energized about serving that 84-year-old couple, that 52-year-old widow, that 19-year-old college student trying to figure out his life, that they're actually energized over that, these people, not just the building, not just the city, not just the income, not just other aspects of ministry or location or generation or culture that they've romanticized in their mind. Mm. Calling to these people they're serving, love of the flock. Number six, cheerfulness and collegiality. You want to hire someone, when they walk in your office, your heart smiles. Mm. Someone you're eager to spend 3 hours thinking about ministry with. Someone you're eager to go to lunch with every 3 weeks. Someone that man, you delight in partnering with. Someone who's a natural fellow yoke mate. Mm. A person who's cheerful and collegial, not just with you, but with other leaders. I mean, it takes one bad apple, as the old saying goes, you know, to ruin the barrel. Mm. It takes one raunchy attitude to make everyone less enjoy serving the local church. And so you want to make sure they're a good fit. And I realize that's generic, that's subjective, but you still need to make sure they're a good fit.
Yeah.
Okay. Number seven, it's more than a job. It's more than a job. And so if they are obsessing over every syllable of the job description, and what does that mean? And would I be asked to do this as opposed to that, and or that as opposed to this? That's probably not a good sign. Again, mm-hmm. We need to put in writing what we expect. They need to get in writing what we expect. So it's appropriate to have that in writing. Indeed, it's essential those things are in writing. But if they are exegeting every aspect of their job description or their potential assignments, and trying to make sure they're really clear about what's in the bucket, not in the bucket, to such a degree you feel like this is a negotiation over future requests and delegate points of delegation, yeah. That's not a good place to be.
Yeah.
So you want a person who's leaning into it, there's a yes and amen in their heart, a readiness to go, a readiness to serve, a readiness to work. Well, Jerry, good grief, I've talked to us now nearly 24 minutes. I'm afraid I'm filibustering our time here. But perhaps a couple words here, a few final remarks as we pull this together. With interviews,
yep.
Interview more, be thorough, call references of references, yep. Check social media, check past sermons. We live in a public world now where so much of our lives are public. You need to exhaust that to find out who they are. And again, it's best to slow walk the interview than to rush the interview and wind up 90 days later wishing you never hired this person in the first place.
Yeah, if you have the 3-year mistake concept in your mind, that will help slow you down through the interview. Because sometimes the need is pressing. I need to fill this role. I really need some help. And if we're not careful, we can do the opposite of what you just suggested. And that's do our due diligence to the interview process, take our time, do the research, check the references. And so patience goes a long way here. The Lord will sustain you during that season. Do your due diligence before you hire that person. Thank you so much for letting me join you.
A delight. Thank you, listeners. So fun to have this podcast, and we hope you find it encouraging on a regular basis. Listen to us regularly, please. Post comments and reviews, and we look forward to having you with us again here soon. Thank you. Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.